There's an isomorphism or similarity that I've noticed between modern branding strategies and abusive intimate relationships, especially ones that women tend to fall into. So this is just a short little insight for you that might make a few things click in your mind. All right, so here's how this works. So what do I mean by modern branding? A lot of people, unless you've actually studied some marketing, don't realize what's really going on in sort of the marketing ecosystem these days. Marketing has evolved quite a lot in the last 50 years, and it's gotten pretty advanced and sophisticated to the point where there are like entire AIs and teams of PR people who are crafting these various marketing campaigns and different brands. And so basically, in the modern business and marketing world, everything is about branding. It's all about creating a brand. Whether you're selling a service or a product, you got to create a brand. And this brand is not just about having a logo, but it's creating a sort of an identity, then marketing this identity, making it popular amongst people, creating fans and subscribers to this identity, whatever it is, might be an Apple identity, it might be a Tesla identity, it might be a video game franchise like Call of Duty or League of Legends or Halo or Elder Scrolls, or it might be a movie franchise like Star Wars or Lords of the Ring or Game of Thrones or basically anything. It might be a brand of toothpaste, Crest toothpaste. And so the point is to create this brand. The brand is supposed to be a marker for the quality of this product relative to its competitors in the industry. So when you see a Nintendo logo at the store on a video game, you expect something from that more than just some generic studio. You've come to expect a certain quality from Nintendo. Most of Nintendo's games, you can reliably trust they're going to be high quality. Nintendo doesn't really release buggy games that are incomplete with a bunch of gimmicks and loot boxes and things like that to scam you. And that, if they keep doing that, they maintain the quality of their brand. And then you like that because other products and lesser brands in the industry that they're competing with, they're lower quality. They don't have that same level of integrity. They try to scam you, rip you off in various ways, sell you defective products. They don't honor their warranties or their refund policies, or the product is incomplete when you buy it. Something's wrong with it. You're unhappy with it, etc. Right? You've been burned by bad branded products. Sometimes you buy a product with no brand on it, and it's okay. It's no different than one with a brand. And it makes you even wonder, why do you even care about brands? But then sometimes you buy a no brand product and it's garbage. And then you realize, oh yeah, I should have spent a little bit more for the brand, because that product would have lasted me for a lifetime. But this garbage, I have to replace it next year. So this is a real thing. Notice yourself encountering this in your life with cars, games, movies, websites, so on. And so really, modern business is about building a brand, developing a brand, launching the brand, popularizing the brand, and then ensuring the integrity of that brand. But you see, what's the connection here? What's the isomorphism between that and intimate relationships, toxic relationships? Well, you see, there's really a trick that these companies are playing on you. The name of the game for most of these companies is to build this brand, get you to become a fan of this brand, to fall in love with this brand, and then once you're hooked and once you fall in love, now they're going to exploit your love. They're going to milk you dry. And the quality of the brand will get diminished more and more and more and more and more, but because you're in love with it, you fell in love with its original state that it was in. Slowly, you end up being boiled alive like a frog, the proverbial frog in the boiling water. You don't even notice that this is happening. And in fact, for many companies, this is a deliberate strategy that they have, whether consciously or unconsciously. They're using this strategy to extract as much money from you as possible. And this is very much what happens with abusive relationships. Because when a woman, and I mean, men can also get into abusive relationships, but more common with women, when a woman gets into an abusive intimate relationship, it doesn't start out abusive. It starts out romantic and beautiful, and the two of them are in love and all of this. But then, over time, once she fully falls in love with him, after sleeping with him a dozen times, she fully falls in love, she commits to him, and then he uses this against her. Because he starts to sense that, oh, well, this woman is weak, she has low self-esteem, she's attached to me, now I can get away with stuff. Now I don't have to treat her as well. I can insult her and be abusive to her, and she'll still stick around. She'll justify it in her mind as just, oh, that, you know, that's just how he is. I have to accept him as he is. I have to be more loving. I'm not being loving and accepting enough. And so he keeps pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And how far he can push it is directly proportional to her level of self-esteem and her boundaries and her respect for herself. Because you see, a woman with high self-esteem and high boundaries and high self-respect, as soon as you do that to her once, she'll tell you about it and she'll call you out on it. And as soon as you do it two times, she says, if you do it again, I'm leaving. And then if you do it a third time, she actually leaves. And the man, he senses that. He senses how serious she is and how willing she is to enforce her boundaries. In a relationship, he sort of tests the boundaries to see what he can get away with, how selfish he can be. And if she lets him, he keeps being more and more selfish, and she keeps being more and more of a doormat. And then this can become very, very toxic in its most extreme forms. So notice the similarity here. What's really happening is that the man is exploiting her love and attachment to him in this situation. And the company or the brand is also exploiting their customer's loyalty and love and attachment for the product or the brand to also be as selfish as they can get away with. So these brands are going to try to be as selfish as they can, because most of these companies are trying to maximize profits, up to the point where their customers will allow it and tolerate it. So let's give an example, because this is still very abstract. So let's say a really good example of this is like with Disney and Star Wars. So the Star Wars fan base is one of the most loyal fan bases in the world, which is why it's such a good example. Like Star Wars fans, the true hardcore fans, they are so deeply in love with Star Wars because of the original high quality of the Star Wars brand, stemming back from, you know, the original episodes with George Lucas, sort of the vision behind them, the originality, the novelty of them, the execution, the special effects. Like, it was groundbreaking, visionary genius type of cinema work back in the 70s and 80s. And then it's kind of gone downhill from there. But the fans, they're living for that nostalgia. And so now George Lucas has sold the brand off to Disney for a couple billion dollars. Now Disney owns it. And of course, does Disney really have a vision for Star Wars? Do they really care about the Star Wars universe per se? No, nobody, no CEO at Disney gives a fuck about the Star Wars universe. And he doesn't give a fuck about the fans either. He cares about the money. He cares about extracting maximum money. And so do the stockholders. And so do most of the advertising and PR people that work for Disney. They don't give a fuck about the actual brand or the quality or the stories or Han Solo. They don't care. All right. But you as the fan, if you're a hardcore Star Wars fan, you really care. You're invested in the story. You're invested so much you're willing to cry over it. It pulls on your heartstrings. Just like with a woman in an intimate relationship when she falls in love, right? She's not thinking logically or rationally about the relationship. She's not sitting there and doing a kind of a cost-benefit analysis, a cold, stark, logical, left-brained analysis of like, well, does this guy treat me well? Could I find a better guy who's maybe going to treat me better and be nicer to me and blah, 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 blah. No, like, no, she's fallen in love. And she has a sense of uniqueness and scarcity about this guy. She feels like, well, but he's my one true love and I won't be able to find a replacement. No other guy is as good as this guy. Those other guys have their problems. They're inferior to this guy. This sort of fantasy is built up in your mind when you fall in love. This sort of illusion of uniqueness. Well, the same thing happens when you're a Star Wars fan. You also start to rationalize yourself like, well, yeah, the latest Star Wars, you know, movies, they're not very good. But hey, you know, it's better than watching Star Trek or something else. And, you know, maybe I have hope. I hope that that some creative visionary, Disney will hire some creative visionary that will come along and will revitalize the Star Wars universe and will bring it back to its glory days and recapture some of that nostalgia. And this nostalgia is this love, really, it's like a drug. You're addicted to it like a drug. You've literally, as a Star Wars fan, you've become a drug addict. And the drug is Star Wars. And Disney knows this. And they are the drug dealer. And they're going to keep supplying you and tempting you with little bits here and there. But the drugs that they're giving you, are these the purest, highest quality drugs? No. They're cutting these drugs with fentanyl and other garbage because, hey, that gives them more drug, gives them more money, and ultimately they don't care about you. They care about the profits because they're selfish, and they were never in it to begin with for the love. They were in it for the money. Their love has been corrupted by money. What they love is money, not the art. See, what you want them to love as a fan is you want them to love the art of the story, of the universe, and so forth. But the people running these companies are not artists. They're not even creatives. These are business people. These are MBAs who have been taught how to extract and milk money through modern marketing methods. See? So you see this also, like, for example, in the games industry. The latest example of that would be Cyberpunk, the launch of Cyberpunk. A really, really good example. Because the CDPR, the studio who made Cyberpunk, fan base, you know, comes from the Witcher series. And people loved the last Witcher, Witcher 3. And so, you know, they sold millions and millions of copies of this. And then people just sort of developed this fantasy of CDPR as this non-sellout, high-integrity company that is willing to make the game that's, you know, the best for the players. And they don't care about money. They're not like EA. They're not like Blizzard, some of these other companies who have, you know, gone corrupt. The CDPR, you know, these are like one of the last bastions of, you know, of studios for the gamer. And then, of course, they publish Cyberpunk and everybody is shocked and surprised. But, of course, it's not shocking or surprising at all. This is exactly what you would expect them to do. As they grow bigger, they lose track of the original passion and love that they had. And it becomes just about profits and just success for the sake of success, numbers for the sake of sales numbers. And then the brand loses its original quality and value. But if you're a loyal CDPR fan and you're, you know, you're thirsting, you're just thirsty for any kind of deep sci-fi RPG. Like you see that trailer for a sci-fi RPG and then you see Keanu Reeves and you're just, oh, you're a Matrix fan and all this and you're in love. You see, you're hooked to it like a drug. That's what attachment is. That's what neediness is. When you're needy, whether with Star Wars, or with sci-fi, or with a certain movie franchise, or with even a certain brand of food, or in an intimate relationship. Usually what ends up happening is that the other party senses this and exploits it for his own advantage. It's only natural, because the human psyche is wired to extract value and to be as selfish as it can possibly get away with. And so if you're not willing to stand for your own values and principles, and if you don't have a spine against exploitation, you will get exploited in life. That's how life works. So it might seem here that we're talking about trivial stuff like Star Wars and cyberpunk. You might say, Leo, what has this got to do with spirituality or personal development? But it's got everything to do with it. It's attachment. We're really talking about attachment and how companies are using this to exploit and abuse you. Just like some men might use this to exploit and abuse, just like some women. Some women can use this against men to exploit and abuse men. See, like, if you're a man who's deeply insecure about his physical appearance and other things about yourself that you don't like, and you struggle with attracting women, but you have money. Let's say you have a good job, like you're a programmer or something. You're earning low six figures or high five figures. And you find some woman and she knows your weaknesses and she starts exploiting them. And she starts asking you for gifts and for vacations and for fancy restaurants. And she knows you'll pay because you're so socially inept that you feel just lucky to have her. And so she'll exploit you that way. And she'll keep exploiting you that way. And in general, women will keep exploiting you that way until you develop some standards, some self-respect. You cure your insecurities and attachments, and then you become detached. And then when you become detached, that's when you become powerful. That's when the situation reverses. So really, this is a lesson about attachment versus detachment. Neediness versus an abundance mindset. You see, if you want to keep your favorite brands honest and high quality, you have to be willing to leave as soon as they start cutting corners. When Bethesda publishes Fallout 76, you leave. You don't be a desperate little bitch and keep buying their stuff and keep talking about how you love the Elder Scrolls and you're going to buy the next Elder Scrolls. No, you need to have a level of detachment where you say, fuck Bethesda and fuck Fallout and fuck Elder Scrolls. Let's see how their next release does without my investment. I'm going to go play other games. Now, that's difficult to do, because many of you gamers that I know, I'm a gamer, I've been a gamer, I've probably played more games and studied games more than most of you have. I was a professional game developer for a while, so I know how this works, and I know the passion that games inspire in people. And, you know, many of you listening to me right now, you know, you're saying, oh my God, Leo, but the next Elder Scrolls, I want it so badly. I've been waiting for a decade since Skyrim. Where's my next Elder Scrolls? I'm going to buy that thing. I'm going to pre-order that thing. Well, that's exactly what's going to make the next Elder Scrolls terrible, probably. When Bethesda knows that they have 30 million loyal fans that will buy their next Elder Scrolls, no matter what is in it, can you really be surprised when you get disappointed by it? When it comes with loot boxes and gambling mechanics and advertisements and in-store purchases and upsells and skins that cost $20 a piece and other sorts of nonsense like this. That is just dumbed down, where the actual soul of Elder Scrolls, the soul of Elder Scrolls has been lost years ago. These are some of the trade-offs and costs of mass success. And the bigger the corporation becomes, the more they chase after mass success, and then the spirit of the art and the work that you as a fan fell in love with is lost. This is sort of the tragedy of the success of many companies, is that they do their best work when they are starving and barely on the edge of survival. When they get too comfortable and fat and lazy, they stop doing good work because they don't need to anymore. Now they've got an established brand, they've got millions of customers that will buy anything and kiss their ass, and so of course they can be lazy now. They can cut corners. And the tendency of the human psyche is to always optimize for energy conservation and to basically be as efficient as possible. So if your mind thinks it can get away with being lazy in life, it will be lazy. And this happens in relationships too. You get into a comfortable groove in a relationship and then you start to become lazy. You stop shaving, you stop putting on makeup for the other person, you stop putting on perfume, you stop taking your loved one to dinner the way you used to, you stop giving her gifts, she stops giving you blowjobs, and it just, and then it deteriorates more and more and more until eventually it's like you are both locked in this laziness spiral, each one outlazing the other, not putting any effort anymore into the relationship. And then, is there any wonder that you're disappointed with it? So one of the keys to life is, first of all, develop detachment. Don't let anyone have anything over you, which means don't need anything too badly. If you need a video game too badly, if you need a movie series too badly, if you need a certain brand of food too badly, you've already screwed up. If you need a job too badly, you've already screwed up. If you need a girl or a relationship or sex too badly, you've already screwed up. If you need a man too badly, if you need a marriage too badly, you've screwed up. If you go into a business negotiation or you're negotiating with an employer for a salary, the one who loses the negotiation, or if you're buying a house or you're selling a business, the one who loses the negotiation is the one who's most attached to closing the deal. And the one who wins the deal and gets the best value is the one who is willing to walk away without any worry of losing anything. That's real power. Learn that lesson and cultivate it across your whole life. Become independent. Don't hinge your happiness or your feelings of love on any external source, because as you do, that source will then, you'll become a slave to that source, whether it's a drug or alcohol or food or desserts or soft drinks or cigarettes or video games. You're going to become a slave to that thing. Maintain your poise, detachment, and independence. And to do that, you need to reground all of those attachments into something deeper within yourself. And that's what spirituality is about. You see, spirituality is a very practical thing. If you're deeply grounded in your own consciousness, and you're able to love yourself, and you're able to love the world without attachments to various things and various biases, this leaves you in a perfectly poised, centered place from which you can act, maintaining your own integrity enforcing your own values, having a high sense of self-esteem, and you're able to be very effective in dealing with people. And when people cross your boundaries, you quickly enforce them and you put them in their place. And then you don't get exploited and abused by people. Not by salespeople, not by family members, not by lovers, not by your children. People need to know that you're serious. People need to know that you've got values and standards and you're not going to compromise. People need to know that if they cross you once, they'll get a warning. If they cross you twice, they'll get a serious warning. And if they cross you a third time, that's it. Three strikes, they're out. You cut them out of your life. You're not going to be giving them fourth and fifth and sixth and tenth chances to redeem themselves. You're a busy person. You got a life to live. You got a life purpose. You got something going on in your life. You got values that you're trying to live by. And people need to sense that. That's what makes you strong and powerful. And then people will look up to you because they'll see you like this rock or this anchor. This is what makes you a powerful leader. And it's difficult to do that because a lot of times we fall into this notion of sort of a false feminine compassion where we are just compassionate to everybody even when they are abusive to us. No, that's not what love means. There is a higher love. The higher love is what I'm talking about is maintaining your poise and integrity. And sometimes that means putting someone in their place, cutting them out of your life, not shopping with a certain brand or company anymore because they've crossed the line, and not taking shit from people, not being a doormat. That is a higher love. That is a love and an honoring of your own highest self, allowing you to maintain your autonomy and power, which you need to live the highest, most loving way in your life. You think you're being maximally loving by letting all of these people exploit you and walk all over you. No, that is not the highest love. And it's also not serving them. Because when you put them in their place, when they cross you, when you enforce boundaries, this actually wakes them up. Because they realize, I can't keep acting like a selfish asshole. I can't keep exploiting people. It's not an effective strategy. And then that forces them to rethink their ways. Whereas if you're going to be bending over backwards for this person, that's not going to help them to wake up. That's not going to help them to find love within themselves. That's just going to make them exploit you in lazy ways. Make sense? Contemplate this and think about all the ramifications this has across your life. This goes way beyond Star Wars or Game of Thrones or whatever favorite franchise you have. This is some deep stuff. And this will save you lots of money. This will save you heartbreak. This will save you from terrible divorces and abuse and con artists exploiting you. There are a lot of people who have had their lives completely ruined because all they did was just naively tolerate others gradually exploiting them more and more and more and more, whether it was their lovers or their family, even their family members. Even your family members can do this to you. Or within business, within finance, or your employer can do this to you. How do you get a good salary and a good position with your employer? You have to have some backbone. You have to be willing to negotiate and challenge them on your true worth. How much does your employer really value you? Or are they lowballing you and trying to pay you as little as possible and give you as little as possible while you're slaving for them like a dog? See? And this takes courage. And this is difficult, I know, because by my nature, I'm a very non-confrontational person. I really don't like confrontation. If I'm given the choice between a confrontation and just walking the other way, I'll just walk the other way. And I was that way for a long time in my life. But also, you live that way and you start to realize the downsides of that. And that sometimes confrontation is important. And if you're not willing to ever get into a bit of a confrontation, then really what that shows you is that you're too much of a coward. You're too scared what others think of you, how others judge you. You're too fearful of standing up to authority or to others who are stronger than you. And when you do that, people don't respect you. And they exploit you even further. And then you stop respecting yourself too. And then you start to feel bad about yourself. And you start to feel unworthy. So this is about raising your standards and pushing yourself, growing yourself. If right now you're a sort of a people pleaser person and you've been very non-confrontational in your life, what would really help you to grow is to get into a few confrontations. Now, of course, you have to be careful about how you do that. I am not giving you a license to be an asshole or to abuse others, because you can certainly swing it in that direction. You got to do it carefully with certain restraint and moderation. But sometimes a confrontation is what's necessary. That's not a license for violence or for name calling. Just the ability to confront somebody on their bullshit or on them exploiting you or manipulating you without being just completely triggered and angry, flying off the handle in a rage, but just in a sort of a calm, grounded way, calling someone out on their bullshit. This is a very powerful and important life skill. And it's difficult to develop that. If you're a non-confrontational person by your nature, just by your personality type or whatever, the way you were raised, you were taught to be polite and so forth. But think of how much this is holding you back in your life. And so really the most important reason that you should actually start to get a little bit more confrontational, play around with it, test it out, is because actually this is something that is missing in the core of your personality. This is something you have to develop. You have to be willing to stand up for your values, for your highest ideals, for what you know is right, for your intuitions. And don't let others bullshit you or bully you or fool you with their stories and excuses. Because that's what will happen a lot of times, is that people always make excuses and rationalizations for their behaviors, and then you start to buy into it because sometimes you're actually a decent person and you want to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. You want to be merciful, but then they exploit your mercy and your kindness. So by all means, be kind, be merciful. These are actually very powerful qualities. They're going to become all the more important as you grow spiritually. But don't be so naive about them that you think that love and kindness and goodness and mercy means that people just do anything and you put up with it. That's not what love means. There is a higher love, a more nuanced, a more complicated love, such that, like, for example, with children, you know, you might think, well, if my child wants some candy, the most loving thing to do is just to give him candy all the time. But that's, that's not the most loving thing to do. If you really love your child, then sometimes you gotta deny him the candy. And he might cry and get angry at you. But you gotta be strong enough in your conviction that you gotta be able to hold that poise and hold what you know to be right and true. Now, of course, you could be wrong in certain situations. And so how do you know if you're doing it out of an arrogance and stubbornness or you're doing it out of a genuine integrity? Well, that's very difficult to make that distinction. For that, you need to really be deeply grounded in your own values, and you got to be wise and mature, and you got to do a lot of spiritual work, personal development work as well, to make those distinctions. And you could still be wrong. So there's also a fine balancing act you got to do between enforcing your boundaries and also being too perfectionistic and too dogmatic. So the balance is very important. You have to allow people their imperfections, and you have to allow people to make mistakes. So you can't expect everyone to always live up to your standards too. That also becomes a problem in a different way. But in this episode, we're specifically concerned about those situations where people are abusing and exploiting you. See, and then really the biggest payoff you get out of this, out of all this, if you work on this and you actualize it, is that you get a strong sense of self-esteem. And a sort of a security in life. You feel secure. Because you know that even if something bad happens, you'll be able to face that challenge. Whereas if you fall into a sort of a cycle of always avoiding and avoiding and avoiding and avoiding confrontation, that makes you more and more fearful. It makes you feel weaker and less effective and more like a victim. And this can get very, very bad, where you can really spiral into a deep black hole of victim mentality and learned helplessness. And then you lose your agency and sovereignty in the world, and you're not able to build and to create your life the way you want. You're not able to express yourself the way you want. And by doing that, you sell out your soul. And then you become a zombie. And then your life doesn't go so good. Then you get depressed. Then you start wondering why life is so bad and unfair. Well, you got to start to take responsibility for this stuff, right? And it all comes back to taking responsibility for your own weaknesses. The reason this is happening to you is because there are weaknesses inside of your psyche that you refuse to confront and take responsibility for and to correct. And life is giving you signals as to where you're weak. You're weak in relationships. You're weak when confronting people. You're weak when you're being sold to by some marketer on the phone. And you're too afraid to tell him to fuck off. And so, like a sheep, you just listen to him, and then eventually you buy his product that you know you don't even want, but you just buy it anyways just to be nice, just to get him off the phone. So one of the biggest misconceptions about spirituality is people construe spirituality as just like the turning of the other cheek all the time and being very meek and letting others have their way with you. The problem, though, is that when you let others have their way with you, really what you're allowing is you're allowing the flourishing of unconsciousness and devilry in the world. If you don't stand up to the devils in the world, who will? Is that really aligned with the highest love? Spirituality requires courage and strength. A lot of courage and strength is required against the opportunism and conveniences of pure pragmatic material survival. In your life, there will be forces pulling you in 10 different directions trying to corrupt you. Within business, within art if you're an artist, within school, within the education system, within academia, within the nonprofit world, within relationships, within your family, there will be corrupting forces pulling on you. These forces will be beckoning you and luring you with sweet promises of easy money, sex and love and pleasure and comfort and convenience. And if you're not deeply grounded in yourself and in consciousness and in wisdom and in truth, you're going to be tempted into all of these sorts of shortcuts, we might say. These are shortcuts to happiness. Hey, just take this drug, or hey, just let's scam our customers a little bit next month. Or like, let's cheat on our taxes, or let's cut the quality of our product. Switch to a lower cost supplier. The customer won't know. But this catches up with you. Eventually the customers catch on. Eventually your partner catches on. They leave you. They stop doing business with you. It ruins your reputation. And ultimately, you've debased yourself. You've lost your poise. And now you can't even respect yourself. It's very easy, because we're such social creatures, to get tugged in all these different directions by peer pressure. Your responsibility is to be grounded in yourself and to maintain your poise, grounded in truth and consciousness and love, independent of what other humans are doing around you. Because the majority of humans around you are going to be doing devilry of various forms. They're going to be engaged in groupthink and ideology and mob mentality. And every fiber of your being is gonna beckon you to jump on the bandwagon onto some new stupid trend, whether it's some new cryptocurrency that everybody is hyping up and buying. Or some Ponzi scheme that somebody is selling, or some get-rich-quick scheme. And you got to be wise enough to see that none of these things are the genuine deal. These are fakes. These are houses of cards. They're lies. They're deceits designed by the ego mind to perpetuate itself. And that you are going to commit to grounding yourself in something deeper. And then you live from that place. And then this is what makes you a remarkable human being, because almost no human being actualizes this in their life, because they're just living down the path of least resistance.